You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
I haven't spoken to Graham Koerner from Koerner's Perspective for a couple of months now. So that appalling situation is about to be rectified because he's on the telephone now. Graham, I think we have to look at the latest data that's just come out in the last 45 minutes or so from the United States of America, where the second quarter GDP print was minus 32.9%. And I know that some people will say, well, it's actually really 8% because this is annualized and everything. But it doesn't matter. It's the worst print in history. It's quite scary, actually.
Yeah, very much so. And I think the issue is, if you look at what Jerome Powell was saying a couple of days ago, you know, while I think there was an overriding sense that, you know, this was largely an April-May issue and the sun started shining again in June, I think what Jay Powell was saying is the fact that the infection rates remain so high, so many people are affected, lots of states looking to curb activity again, that actually doesn't augur well for economic outlook going forward. So I think the worst quarterly GDP number in history, down 33%.
But, yes.
You know, we knew this was going to be an awful quarter, but I think the point is we've now got 1 month down on the revised quarter. Things are looking better. Maybe some of the high frequency data, if you look at, you know, some of the jobless claims and so forth, I think causing some anxiety again. But yeah, I think the reality is this thing's probably going to have a slightly fatter tail than people anticipated maybe, you know, 3 months ago. So, but a shocking number in large part. I think the world knew this was coming. If you look today, European markets are down a bit, but I think that's also just on a growing sense that, you know, maybe we've all become a little bit too reliant on stimulus, whether it's from the GOP or from Jay Powell or anybody else. It's, you know, we've just become a little bit too dependent on that, and maybe the realistic earnings outlook for, you know, the S&P 500 generally is not looking great, and depending on who you look at, if we fast track maybe 18 months, we're probably still not even going to see the kind of earnings that we saw in 2018 or 2019. And that, I think, is what really is spooking markets. So, but yeah, we knew this was going to be awful. You know, the whole world basically went into a state of hibernation for the better part of 2 months.
Here's a tweet that I got from a chap called Peter Schiff, who's reveling in this current market activity and economic activity. Although he doesn't enjoy it, he likes reporting upon it. I interviewed him, in fact, last week about the gold price and other matters. He has said 9 minutes ago on Twitter, the unemployment outlook is getting bleaker as new weekly jobless claims were not only above 1 million for the 19th consecutive week, but with today's 1.434 million, they are now higher for the second week in a row. The recovery, in inverted commas, has already ended, he says, and the relapse has already begun. Now, slightly a sensationalist, but you see what he's saying.
Yeah, but I don't think he's entirely wrong because, you know, I think there's a big debate going on in the U.S., particularly in Washington, whether the unemployment benefits, you know, or maybe a little bit too rich, and that's adding to, you know, some of the jobless claims. But I don't think that's entirely true. I think the reality is a lot of businesses in South Africa, in the U.S., in Europe, I think everywhere around the globe, small and medium-sized businesses have been fighting for survival. Many of them, you know, if you look at tobacconists and many other industries, you know, for 3 months have had absolutely no revenue. The expense base remains there. And I think that's the reality of the situation. So we've kept the patient, being the U.S. consumer and small business in America, on life support for a while. But unfortunately, you know, in many cases, it's terminal. And I think that's probably what Peter is talking to, is the fact that, you know, we saw the shock, initial jobless claims and unemployment figures, you know, over 20%. We knew that was temporary, but it's not going to go racing back to a 4% unemployment rate. I think it's going to probably stick stubbornly above 10% for a while.
Yes, indeed. Since we spoke, there's been a raft of results from JSE-listed companies. Standard Bank, one of your company favourites over the years that I've been speaking to you. It's always been your favourite bank. I don't know if that's changed recently, but probably not. But they came out with their numbers yesterday, I think it was, the share price rallying over 5%, despite the fact that the market, the numbers rather, were fairly grim. But of course, it was already factored in. But along with Standard Bank, there's been lots of others as well. I mean, have you looked at your portfolios, given the numbers and given the pandemic that we've endured now for 4 or 5 months? Have you changed? Have you shifted your portfolios at all?
We try not to look at the portfolios. That's depressing. No, I'm just joking. You know, you've got to look through this quarter. So, you know, if you look at AB InBev as an example, you know, that share rallying at one point today, up over 10% in South African trade, results grim. You had volumes down 17%. You know, gross profit was down, I think it was 26%. But I think what the market took comfort from, and the fact that it rallied hard, but was settling back a little bit now, is the fact that the June figures actually looked better. So April and May were absolutely awful, and then suddenly June was up on the comparative. So I think that's lifting the spirits a little bit. But I think if you take somebody like Standard Bank, obviously they have to throw the kitchen sink at it from a provisioning point of view. Activity levels, you can imagine, you know, shopping activity and general consumer behavior, you know, people buying Forex, for example, that was way down in April and May. So you expect a lot of companies, the earnings the earnings didn't just sort of largely evaporate. In many cases, they turned negative because you have, you know, no change in the overhead base and yet the revenues collapse. So I think in the case of Standard Bank, it's discounted. You know, the share price has come from, call it 180 Rand or thereabouts to 100 Rand. So the market, I think, is expecting, you know, earnings in the South African banks for this year to be down probably a third to 40% conservatively. But then we probably resume the medium to long-term trend. So, you know, earnings will get smashed down to maybe 12 or 13 Rand for the 2020 year, and they'll probably rebound to 16 or thereabouts or 17 for the following year. So when you look at it on current valuations, you'd say they're still sitting probably on a December 2020 PE of circa 10 times. And if you look out a year, then suddenly if you're going to get 15 or 16 Rand's worth of earnings, they're looking very cheap. They're down to sevens. And then obviously when the dividends start flowing again, those dividend yields will probably be even better than they were before the crisis because the share prices are down. So I think that's exactly the point. You know, you look at the portfolios, you take note of the share prices. But I think our job is to sort of say, well, how much of this is a one quarter, you know, real hit and then a recovery from there? And I think for most businesses, that is the case. But, you know, somebody that we sadly bought a little while ago was City Lodge.
Yes.
I mean, it's going to take City Lodge quite some time for their income statement to rebuild itself. Obviously doing a massive rights issue, but you know what? The nice thing is they're going to emerge out of this with very little, if any, debt. So they'll have a much stronger balance sheet and, hopefully tourism and business travel picks up again. And then, you know, maybe 2 years from now, you know, the earnings start rebuilding, maybe 6 Rand or 8 Rand, in a year or so's time. That would be gratifying. Then suddenly, you know, at 18 Rand, the shares look really cheap. Of course, we must recognize that. And I think this is something that we're always having to recalibrate when companies do these rights issues. And we're not really a big holder of Fushini Group, but, you know, TFG is doing a rights issue. City Lodge, of course, is doing quite a big one. So that obviously has the effect of diluting the earnings per share because you've got a lot more shares in issue. But over time, you also get a saving on the debt. So that's kind of an offsetting effect. But those are the things we've got to remember, that, you know, we've got a near-term panic, but, you know, that is having a real-world impact. So companies are burning through cash in many cases. They're having to issue more shares to pay down debt and almost just to survive. And, of course, there are some industries like tobacco and alcohol in South Africa that are really, really bleeding. So it really is a very mixed bag. But the best I can say is this thing probably, as I said earlier, is going to last for a little longer than we thought. It's going to be deep and profound. But having said that, we will come out of this. It's just the question how these companies actually emerge, let's say a year or 18 months from now. And that ultimately, Lindsay, it comes down to the same old thing. It's down to the leadership, how they take advantage of these opportunities and how, you know, they attack the cost base and how they position themselves for the future, rather than just looking at the near term. Because if you're simply reacting to what's happening in South Africa right now, I think you're missing some major opportunities.
Yeah, I think you are. But unfortunately, you've got to be very, very patient and be prepared for some pain in the short term while you wait for us to come out the other side, which is something that people keep on saying, coming out the other side, which is an irritating phrase, but absolutely right. And just referencing that Peter Schiff tweet that I dictated to you earlier on, I think what we might have here is the bounce back, but as you said, the relapse. You know, you are starting to feel better. It's almost like the virus itself. I've heard lots of accounts of people that started to feel better and then suddenly go back and the symptoms become worse. And it's almost as though that's going to happen to the stock market. And I can't see any other scenario, as cases every single day worldwide go up between 200 and 250,000 people, and hospitals become more stretched, and the economy shrinking in the United States by almost a third is quite a staggering figure. And these numbers really hit home. And when you have a look at the market now, Graham, the futures market, as we pre-record this interview, the S&P is down over 1%. The NASDAQ is down 1.2%. I think NASDAQ futures, 1.1% weaker. I think suddenly people are waking up and saying, no, this is something that we've never dealt with before, we've never seen before in our lifetimes, and we don't know how to handle it. Companies don't know how to, economists don't know how to interpret it, and certainly leadership worldwide. I mean, apart from a few notable exceptions, leaders are completely clueless. They're in disarray.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. But Lindsay, the one thing that has got me feeling quite anxious about the world is, in spite of what you were saying, you know, the unemployment rate probably ticking up again, you know, Q3 GDP is not going to be this miracle recovery that everybody hoped for. In the US, if I tell you that on a 1 year view, the S&P 500 is up 7.9%, the NASDAQ is up over a third, you know, you would say, what pandemic? What GDP collapse are you talking about? What spike are you referring to in unemployment? What disposable income destruction are you actually alluding to? Because it's not being seen in the asset markets, particularly in the US. So that's something that really scares the dilliness out of me. But you know, if you say maybe over the next 2 years, S&P 500 earnings rebuild to say 160 as an example. You know, at 3,200, that thing sitting on a forward of over 20. And it's not like we're getting spectacular earnings growth. As I say, 160 would still have us below the peak earnings. So that's what worries me, is the fact that, and realistically, there are a block of shares that are underpinning asset markets at the moment, particularly in the US. The broader market, you're hearing about a lot of pain in small companies. So, you know, some guys are estimating that sort of, you know, with this reporting season that will happen now, you know, that company, big company earnings could be down by 40 or 50%, but small companies, you know, in the Russells of the world are probably going to see earnings almost completely evaporate. So those are the things that worry me, Lindsay, the fact that, exactly to your point, you know, people talk about the second wave of infection. The U.S. hasn't even finished with the first wave of infection, and unfortunately, complete missteps and advice for people to ingest or inject, you know, household cleaners and things didn't help. There's just so much disinformation that I think increasingly people are losing confidence in leadership around the world. And I think also, you know, a lot of people are saying, well, what do we pay medical aid for? What do we pay, you know, so much tax for when the medical system, when we need it most, cannot cope? So I think this is going to expose some massive fault lines. But, you know, I think if I could put my social hat on for a second.
Please do.
We're talking about real, let's call them, you know, first world problems. Many, many third world citizens are facing you know, incredibly difficult circumstances. Probably, you know, 20% of South Africans, you know, I think the statistics indicated before COVID would go to bed hungry. That number is probably increased by, you know, maybe another 20 or so percent. That's the reality. And I think, you know, we can debate, you know, policy missteps, but the reality is that this has exposed the inefficiency and the ineffectiveness of a lot of policies around the world, not just in South Africa. And that, unfortunately, is probably going to have a social and a political, tail to it. So I think that's something we must bear in mind. I think you're probably going to find a lot of citizens angry around the world about the as you pointed out, the ineptitude of governments to respond to the challenge, but also how, you know, we were completely unprepared or ill-prepared for this pandemic. And I think, you know, a lot of people are probably saying, okay, well, it was COVID-19, but what's it going to be in 2022? So I think the world is scarred, maybe not permanently, but these wounds will linger for some time.
And talking about wounds and lingering, I have to put some political angle to our discussion, because there's a tweet just come up from Donald J. Trump since we've been speaking. It says here, with universal mail-in voting, not absentee voting, which is good in brackets, 2020 will be the most inaccurate and fraudulent election in history. It will be a great embarrassment to the USA. Delay the election until people can properly, securely and safely vote. People have been saying this. They say that he's going to cancel the election and therefore stay in power. And it's suddenly started with this tweet. It's quite astonishing. He's going to stay in power. He's going to try and stay in power. And there's going to be chaos, Graham, if that happens.
Yeah, I think what you're starting to find, the GOP, I think, is trying to rally, but you're finding more and more Republicans, I think both high-level officials and rank-and-file Republicans, starting to say this is just not good enough. You know, the response of the, you know, sort of the laissez-faire attitude towards COVID in the beginning, or the China virus, as he calls it, it really highlighted the fact that we cannot endure another 4 years of this. So I think I hear you. And I mean, there are other people who are saying if the election goes ahead, then he'll just refuse to accept the result and contest, you know. So it is quite amazing that we actually have to have these discussions.
It's astonishing, isn't it? It is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's other things I could say now, but this is not a political discussion. Okay. How are you positioning yourself? Are you positioning yourself for a potential unknown? It's a known now, but it's an unknown known. Are you positioning yourself for the next 2 years in that light? In other words, you don't know what's going to happen. You've got to become defensive now. Okay, City Lodges, the City Lodges of this world are great companies, but unfortunately what's happening is beyond their control and beyond anyone's control. How are you approaching it? Because you've had a very sort of stoic and not rigid, but certainly well-embedded approach to your portfolios over the years that we've been speaking. Any chance you're going to change?
Well, I mean, sadly, we've been touting the case for mid caps and small caps over the last while. And of course, that's, if you have to be honest, was in terms of the way the markets have behaved, probably exactly the wrong thing. So if you look at, you know, take the top 40 index, which obviously is heavyweight driven, on the 1 year view, we're basically perfectly flat. You go and look at the small caps, they're down 25%. But we still believe in the optionality and the ability for small caps to actually navigate these difficult times. You know, we've got quite a few companies in our portfolios. You know, we often tease ourselves and say we should rename ourselves NAV Capital, because, you know, if you're buying good businesses that have proven themselves at discounts to net asset value, never mind, you know, your assessment of intrinsic value, is probably a reasonable margin of safety. So I think that hypothesis stands. We've probably moved a little bit more defensive, Lindsay, than we were in the past. What is interesting is you've seen, if you take a company like Remgro that you'll know I've been fairly critical of for some time, suddenly you can sense a desire there to unlock value. We saw it with the RMB first round unbundling and collapse of that structure. So things like that, we started tilting back towards some of those. It doesn't change, you know, if you look at our portfolios, we still have, you know, conceptual exposure to Anglos and BHP Billiton and, you know, companies like Bidvest and Standard Bank. We still believe that those are good businesses. You know, we haven't bought, if you take commodities, we haven't bought commodity stocks for a while generally, because I think Mark Cutifani from Anglos, who released earlier today, sort of summarizes, you know, their base case is probably for iron ore somewhere between 60 and 70. I would agree with that. So, you know, with iron ore a good $20, $25 higher than that at the moment, we feel that maybe the commodity cluster is a little bit expensive. And my point is that we did some work recently where we looked at the three-year, how's this for long-term investing? We looked at the three-year average earnings per share. We took Standard Bank and Absa and a whole basket of them. And we said, right, take the last three financial years' earnings, add them together and divide by three so that you can almost get like a smooth moving average on the earnings to try and show the trends. And that tends to eliminate, you know, the GFC hits and so forth. And, you know, the reality is that we see this collapse in big bank earnings courtesy of COVID as a temporary thing. I think it'll take a little while longer than the GFC maybe to fully recover. But you know what, you're buying great global businesses who are on ridiculously low ratings. So I think that still holds true, but we've probably looked more towards NAV underpins. The truth is you put even more emphasis on the quality of management, firstly. And secondly, you know, gearing is, you know, having too much debt now, although debt costs you almost nothing, having too much debt, as we've seen in City Lodge as a case in point, although that was largely inspired by the BEE scheme, which of course is a possible South African Achilles heel. But the truth of it is that as long as there's not ridiculous amounts of debt, as long as the management team themselves are able to recalibrate, and if the companies have a long track record of results delivery, but an ability also to pivot, then you know they tick the boxes. So we're not going to run out of the equity markets or change tack massively. But I think, yeah, the flexibility and the ability of management to pivot, and now probably more than ever to focus on costs and eliminating waste, is probably the key thing in South Africa. Offshore, we've still got a lot of cash. We nibbled in late March and early April, and then the markets ran away from us. So we're now just sort of hanging back and waiting for them to come back. And you had a company like Royal Dutch Shell earlier today, you know, releasing awful numbers. But yeah, this too shall pass. You know, suddenly we're talking about oil back in the 40s, in mid 40s or early 40s versus maybe under 30 for much of the previous quarter. So there are opportunities, but en masse, what I would say is I think valuations are excessive, particularly in the US. And I think the markets are probably due for a bit of a sell off. And yeah, I think your point was well made. You know, if you take a long term view, you probably want to nibble here, but be careful and probably diversify the portfolio quite nicely across stuff. But you know, don't expect a massive rebound. But I honestly believe if you're paying 105 or 110 rand for Standard over the next 2 or 3 years, you're going to do well. Mm. And Lindsay, let's not forget, you know, Saab has cut rates in South Africa massively. So, you know, where you were getting over 7 on cash, now you're getting maybe 4.5 or thereabouts. Suddenly the opportunity cost for being in equities is not that high. And of course, inflation is also moderated. So I think you sort of feel you need to go looking for yield, because frankly you're not going to get it in cash. And if you look in the government bond markets, I mean, in developed markets, that's like, I believe it's the biggest accident waiting to happen to buy negative yielding debt. Or, you know, if you look at the US, you're looking at almost record lows on say US 30 years. Stuff like that to me just is terrifying. I would then rather, frankly, go and buy some Royal Dutch Shell and hope and pray that you know the world is a better place, because if it is, you're going to probably make good money. But I honestly can't see how, you know, if you're buying a really long dated government bond issued by a government that themselves is issuing debt as though, you know, it's free. I think that's a real accident waiting to happen. So I'd rather hold companies than, you know, currencies, and I'd rather own companies than governments right now. I suppose that's the key thing.
Graham, lots of very interesting points and very well made. And we mustn't leave it as long as we did before. In other words, 2 months. We'll speak more regularly, please. That's Graham Koerner from Koerner Perspective. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position or opinion of any other agency, organisation, employer or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.